Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Bright Khumalo, and tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth and independent analyst Chris Gilmore. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. I'll start with you, Alex. I mean, our local market, has been pumping. I don't know how many days in a row we're seeing green. Definitely it feels like it's been more than the US. What gives? What's happening locally?
Hey, good evening. So obviously the markets has been very weak since March. So finally getting a bit of a respite in the moment. I think if you look at what's happening in the US as well, the earnings season has, you know, results have been better than anticipated. I think a lot of analysts expected earnings to be a bit weaker than it has been so far. And I think you can see for in South Africa. I mean, a bunch of the results, you know, none of that necessarily being very bad, but also not particularly good. So I think it's, we are going on, and perhaps the sell was a bit overextended for the time being. But obviously, the market is now looking ahead again for the next 12 months, and many more variables at play here now that, you know, at the moment we can't really foresee what's going to happen. So for the time being, I think the results have been quite well, and I think this recovery in share prices are justified from its lows of end of June.
Yeah, and I think locally we could still go higher. I mean, like you said, I liked it even more when the local market was in the green, and the rest of the world was in the red. And that's where we belong, actually. Comrades Coco, I mean, talking about offshore markets and earnings on that side, I mean, the GDP numbers came out, another contraction of 0.9%. Is this any cause for worry for long-term investors? And I mean, what does it mean? What's going on exactly?
Yeah, you know, Bright, I watched Jerome Powell last night talking in the FOMC meeting. And it was interesting. He's a very worried man. And he was choosing his words very, very carefully. And he's obviously trying to get a balance in terms of increasing interest rates whilst not pushing the U.S. into recession.
Yes.
And he made the point on so many occasions that the U.S. isn't in recession. And there are so many indicators now telling you that it's not in recession, and it probably isn't. And, you know, there are so many indicators out there. I mean, for example, job vacancies. You can't fill jobs in the U.S., in the U.K., in certain areas. I mean, so many people have now just left the workforce. And you can do that. You can't do it in South Africa, because otherwise you starve. But in the developed world, so many people are doing this. They've just said enough. They're hurtful, and they're leaving. And you try and replace them, and the inflationary impact of that is there. So look, Powell's got a very, very difficult job. I suspect what's going to happen is that it is going to go into recession at some point in time, in the not too distant future. And that is going to bring inflation down. So he doesn't know yet. That's why I say he was choosing his words very, very carefully last night. He was a very worried man because, you know, all the cockiness that was so apparent a few months ago when he was saying, gee, it's only transitory.
Inflation, yeah.
I mean, it was all drivel. And
yes.
I think he knows that now. So now he's being much more cautious, much more careful. So the U.S., it's a very, very tough one. We're in this kind of no man's land at this point in time, and we will be for the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, interesting. Let's jump into some of our stocks, stock questions that we have here. I'll start on Twitter with Paolo Ribeiro, who says, "Hi all, as an Ethos shareholder, will I benefit from the potential premier listing?" This is a good question there for us, Alex.
Yeah, so obviously Ethos, you know, it's kind of sizable investment into Bright.
Yes.
And of course, Bright is looking to list premier. So certainly there will be a benefit from that. So obviously the idea is when you're going to list premier, obviously we'll get a fair market value for premier, but also the rest of the Bright stable will then perhaps also have a true more higher reflection value as perceived by value. But unfortunately, the market is not particularly attractive for new IPO listings at the moment. But theoretically, yes, it should be. If there's a listing, the value in Bright will then most likely rise, and then also if for stake, most likely will rise.
Yes, and Comrade Skoko, where would a company like Premier sit in terms of, you know, fast-moving consumer goods companies that are listed on the JSE? I mean, we already have, you know, the Tiger brands of the world, and we've got AVI, and you know, I start running out of names.
Yeah, it would be closer to Tiger brands. I mean, AVI is much more niched. It's much more of a brands company. This is a kind of more heavy commodity type thing. I mean, bread and this type of thing. So, yeah, look, I'm not sure I find it particularly attractive. I'd far rather be in the retailer than the producer. That is what has been the case up until now for quite some time. The producer has been getting progressively squeezed. The retailer hasn't been doing particularly well either, but at least has the ability to pass costs on to the ultimate consumer. Now, I think that the producer is finding himself in a much more difficult position than the retailer.
Yeah, interesting. We've got a couple of questions here from Lulama, so we'll go through them down, you know, slowly. She's asking us about our take on Mustek. Alex, you follow Mustek at all, and Pinnacle, I don't even know what they call Pinnacle these days. It's got a new name.
Yeah, no, I've been a big fan of Mustek for give or take the last 7 or so years. And I've mentioned as one of my stock picks a few times. But yeah, Mustek obviously has been a huge beneficiary of COVID. They made record earnings, last set of results. And also the interim results was also very strong. They are expected to give full year numbers now in June. I do anticipate it's going to be good numbers. The question is going to be the outlook going forward. Now, unfortunately, we know, of course, tragically, that the founder, David Kahn, and also CEO, passed away recently.
Yes.
There's been internal promotions and so forth, so I do have confidence in the team that they could take the business forward, but obviously we'll have to get a sense of what the strategic direction is and so forth. But I think Mustek, obviously, the valuation is still, in my view, very compelling. I mean, it's not expensive at all. They should be generating good cash flows at the end because they tend to be working capital consumption in H1 and then it flows out in H2. They have recently done some share buybacks that shows you that management or the board is still confident going forward. So, yes, I'm certainly a fan of Mustek at these levels, but the results will get an update most likely in August somewhere in results in September.
Yeah, and Comrade Skoko, I mean, if you look at that share price at almost $17, it reminds me of a time, you know, about 8 years ago where Pinnacle went all the way up. I think it went as much as 27 rands and came all the way down because of certain inconsistencies and problems that they had internally. But, I mean, that has only meant, you know, Mustek doing very well, you know, and slowly trotting up, just picking up market share and doing well.
To be honest, I haven't followed Pinnacle, but I would fully endorse what Alex has said about Mustek. I mean, look, there's a company that's been around a long, long time. And, I mean, sitting on a really ridiculously low PE, tremendously well-managed company. As Alex says, I mean, it's terribly sad that David Kahn died fairly recently. Because, I mean, he was the life and soul of that business. But nevertheless, you know, it's got strength and depth in management. And no, I fully endorse what Alex was saying. I mean, that's an absolute sitter as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being told here on my ear that it's no longer called Pinnacle. It's called Alviva or whatever that is.
Ah, right. I still don't follow it.
Fantastic. Do we follow Santova at all? I think it's been an interesting business, you know, as of late. I mean, you know, with what's happening in the supply chain side of things. Do you want to talk to us, Alex, about Santova?
Yes, so obviously they are tied to a global logistics, more the IP they supply to that to make it more efficient and so forth. We know with supply chain issues we've had over the last 2 years. So Santova's had a very good set of results. Actually generate very good cash flows and also very well diversified from a foreign perspective. So they do have quite a sizable business in Europe and Asia and so forth. So very good rand hedge for a small cap business. not particularly capital intensive either. So there is good cash generation. It means it flows through to the shareholder, either through special dividends or share buyback. So Santova's at a sweet spot. I'm not that close to the business to really get a sense of what the growth prospects is organically going forward, but certainly they've done well and most likely will continue to do well for the time being. But I struggle to get a sense of what the medium to long-term outlook would be for Santova. And perhaps just to add something on the previous question on Alviva, there is a takeover offer at 25 Rand being tabled at the moment. So there's a good chance that Alviva could be delisted in the market if that's accepted. So we'll have to wait and see.
Oh, okay. Interesting take on Alviva. It changes the whole game, right? Anything to add on Santova, Combates Coco?
Never looked at it.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that the share price is at 7 Rand 61 cents. It has to be one of the best performing shares on the JSE in the past 2 years, man. It's everything is going well for that business. We have a question here from Soup Lord, aka Kolan, who says, so you're telling me there's a US recession, but the day is green, or is it just a fake breakout? That's an interesting question for you, Comrade Skoko. So we're all supposed to be panicking, throwing our toys, buying, I guess, shotguns and canned foods because a recession is looming and those things are going to be much valuable than stocks. But why are stocks green?
Well, you know, I was watching the S&P and the Dow last night as Powell was speaking, and, you know, the S&P was creeping up very nicely. So, you know, I mean, that's when you've had a 75 basis point increase, and I suppose you can justify it, you can rationalize it in the sense that you say that, when interest rates are rising, it's reflecting a growing economy. Well, that's not strictly true in this case. But look, there are certain aspects of the American economy that are actually booming. We've alluded to certain parts of it. I mean, the services industry is still going through the roof. What is also happening in the background, and maybe a lot of people aren't actually aware of this, is that a lot of manufacturing is moving back from China to America. The Americans are incredibly good at manufacturing things. They just got lazy 20, 30 years ago and started outsourcing to China. And the Chinese were awfully good at what they did.
They started unionizing. Now, that's the problem.
well, you can argue that if you want. But, you know, the Chinese are not supermen. And as Americans, actually, when they put their mind to doing things, are awfully good at manufacturing. You don't really see very many manufactured products from America other than airplanes and computers. But I'm thinking of things like Briggs & Stratton lawnmowers and stuff like that. Everything they make is awfully well made. It's sturdy. And I think a lot of that production is coming back to America. It's going to take 10 years. But the process has started. They're already starting. They've been making TV sets in America for the past decade or so now. So yeah. It's coming back. It's coming back home, if you like. We're not talking about Rust Belt stuff. I mean, we're not talking the kind of nonsense that Donald Trump was talking about. We're talking about
real
good old-fashioned manufacturing. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think, you know, there are some fundamental reasons to get excited about the American economy in the longer term. But that's why I say I think the next few weeks and months are going to be a little bit tricky for the U.S. economy.
I wanted to hear your thoughts, Alex, on, you know, how are we having a green day? I mean, if we're looking for bad news, we've had two in the past 2 days, and we had green on both days in the U.S. First, Comrade Skoko mentioned we had, you know, the 75 basis point increase in interest rates, and then after that we had a release of GDP numbers showing a contraction of 0.9%. We should all be hiding in our foxholes and letting the tanks roll, but that's not the case.
Yes, I mean, Chris did allude to it earlier that, you know, the U.S. economy, there's still lots of areas that do well, for example, the employment numbers. And even though today's number, GDP number, which was negative, indicates a technical recession, you know, 2 quarters of negative GDP, then the U.S.
Which they're sugarcoating, by the way. They're saying, no, wait for the Bureau of Statistics to tell you what it is. It's not a recession yet. We need to wait for other data to come in.
Exactly. Now, so we know, of course, there's a midterm election coming up in November, and usually when there's a recession, you lose an election. So that's why they're obviously trying to sugarcoat it a little bit. But there is some element to truth of it. I mean, the fact that unemployment is still so low, there are still some pockets of strength in the U.S. economy, but there's no doubt that the U.S. economy has slowed down materially over the last few months, and the consumers are feeling a lot more strain than it did. But this is all relatively known in the market, and that's why the market has been so weak since March. And if you also look at the split between the 2 and 10 year yield curve, it's currently inverted, meaning the 10 year bonds are currently lower than the 2 year. That indicates going forward, there's most likely going to be a recession. That means interest rates will have to come down again. So even though we're on an interest rate cycle now, if we do go into a deep sort of recession later this year or early next year, the Fed will most likely reduce interest rates again, right, to try to boost economic activity, and that will most likely boost asset class prices and so forth. So there's not necessarily just a straight line upwards regarding interest rates. There will be some periods where it also comes down and to boost economic activity again.
Yeah, that sounds like a madman's game. I mean, you increase it aggressively to fight inflation, then you reduce it to boost the economy, and then I don't know what narrative you'll be telling our kids in, you know, 2025, or, you know, not even 2025, 2030, 2040, 2050. It's going to be, it's an interesting game, to say the least. Let's jump back to our question. We've got Moiponi Rasekala here who says, hello, Omnia is down 12%, or sorry, was down 12% yesterday, and down 2% today. Is it a buying opportunity? So, Comrades Coco, are you following Omnia? I mean, it's been a nice turnaround story. There's been a lot of upside, obviously, with, you know, paying down the debt and everything going according to plan, but now all of a sudden down.
I haven't really looked at that for a while, but it should be doing well. I mean, the fertilizer company, basically, you know, in the wake of what's happening globally with fertilizer prices going through the roof. But yeah, as I say, I haven't looked at this one for a long, long time.
And Alex, Omnia for you?
Yeah, so the main reason for the stock being down 12% yesterday was because XDIF paid a normal dividend as well as a special dividend. So, I mean, that fall in the price is irrelevant because you will receive the dividend. Operationally, the company has given good results. It's been a remarkable turnaround, as you alluded to. So the business is doing well operationally. The only issue they have, they've still got this outstanding SaaS issue, which we don't really know or can't quantify at this particular moment. So if it's not material, then Omnia looks very good. But if it's material, then it's a little bit of a dark cloud over it. But certainly the business is in the best position it's been for a number of years.
Yeah, fantastic. I think so as well, in terms of, you know, where the how the balance sheet looks like now as compared to where we were during COVID. It looked like Armageddon, but now not so much. And obviously the share price has shown that, you know, that turnaround. We've got a question here from Lenro, who says, is Salungalo X Westcall a buy? You follow West Coal, or maybe let's just talk about the coal industry as a whole, Comrades Coco.
Coal industry generally, I think, is going through something of a revival at this point in time, both locally and internationally, because of what's been happening with the war in Ukraine, because of the European gas supplies getting squeezed, and a lot of countries turning back to coal. I mean, coal is something that it's a nasty, dirty energy source. Yeah, sure, but you know what? It's readily available, and the Russians can't tamper with it. So, yeah. And then locally, of course, you know, you need it to run the majority of Eskom power stations.
Yes.
So, look, it's certainly got an attraction, probably for quite some time to come. I think a lot of people must have been writing coal off quite vigorously a year or two ago. And then, of course, the banks wouldn't give you any funding for coal exploration, this type of thing. So that's all changed, at least for the time being.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at that green bond ETF, I mean, they're busy doing a capital raise for coal. You know, that's a contradiction right there in the sentence.
Yeah.
You never heard me say that. But anyways, that's what's happening in Europe. Meanwhile, they're telling us to move to renewables, which is totally ridiculous, if you ask me. Your thoughts on coal industries, Alex, and if you had to pick a coal company to put in your portfolio currently to take advantage of, you know, what's going on globally, which one would you pick?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at the last few years, there's been this incredible movement towards, let's call it ESG or anti dirty energy types of like coal.
Fossil fuels.
And
Yeah.
unfortunately, the politicians and bankers and even some asset allocators hasn't really thought this through. So they're almost like expected to go from using coal power stations to having no coal overnight with no real plan of how you're going to transition orderly over time. And this has led to all sort of imbalances. We're seeing, of course, massive underinvestment in oil over the last 7 or so years. Now oil is going to be higher, massive underinvestment in coal. Coal is going to remain very high. So this poor planning has really caused this issues. Other than, obviously, you've got now an outlier event like the Russia, so we're just making it worse. But there's been a number of factors that's led up to this.
Yeah.
But because of that, I think coal is going to be stickier for longer. So I agree with what Chris has said there. And obviously, locally, you've got a few options. Something like a Glencore will be a massive beneficiary, the biggest exporter of thermal coal in the world. You've got Thungela, which is massively highly geared to the coal price, very attractive valuations. You've got Exxaro that will benefit, and of course you've got the old West Coal or Sekunjala. Now, that business, if you look at it on a like-for-like basis relative to Nugela, it looks very attractive, but the quality of the assets and management team, etc., is not on the same level, but there is certainly a relative opportunity you can talk about there. But
yeah.
I prefer to rather focus on a Glencore or Thungela. I think both those counters are looking very attractive for market.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. Let's talk about storage. This is another question from Twitter. On top of that, they're asking if we've reached a bottom yet. I think that's been a question for the past month. I mean, we sort of bounce back, in terms of market performance. Have we bottomed yet, Comrades Coco? And your thoughts on storage?
I like storage. I think it's a great story, both here and in the UK. It took me quite some time before I really bought into this whole story about self-storage. But it's a global phenomenon, and those guys are right up there with the best in the world. If you look at all the property companies, I mean, this is a very different type of property REIT. And I say, fundamentally, I really don't see a problem with this one at all.
Okay.
Look, it's not going to shoot the lights out by any stretch of the imagination. Of course not. But, it's good, solid growth.
Okay, fantastic. Do you want to talk about storage before we go to our stock picks, Alex?
Yeah, sure. So I do have some positives and some negatives on storage. So
okay, I like
positives. As Chris says, they've done incredibly well. Since the listing, and they build a very solid business in SA. The bond negatives is for me difficult to really get a grasp of the assets they are buying in the UK. Are they really of high quality? Most of those assets are being acquired as brownfields as to greenfields that develop here locally. You're going to get a sense of they're overpaying for those assets. Can imagine the same way they can do it here locally. And also because of this very aggressive move towards overseas, the quality of earnings in the business has also deteriorated.
Yeah.
If you look at the cash generation business, it's gone backwards over the last few years. And yes, you could argue because they're investing heavily and so forth, but also some of these assets they're buying aren't generating some amount of cash they've done before, and they're using a lot more debt and scrip. Now, the share price currently is quite high, so they can use scrip. And all property companies about 6 or 7 years ago were using the high share prices to fund their growth. But as soon as the share prices start dropping, that whole business model falls apart.
Yeah.
You can't issue shares anymore, and then you're stuck. You've got a debt problem like we're seeing with so many companies at the moment. Storage is one of those. Everything is going in their favor at the moment, but what if something goes wrong and the share price starts derating? I mean, then this business model could be a problem. So I'm a little bit stuck on the fence. I was an initial big shareholder in the business in the past. These days,
not so much.
I think they are not so much my favorite, but I'm not against the business. I'm just highlighting some of the risks out there.
Okay, fantastic. Moment of truth, Comrades Coco. What's your stock pick for the evening?
Okay, I'm going for U.S. defense ETF, ITA. I was going to go for Lockheed Martin because of the HIMARS things in Ukraine. Look, I think this Ukrainian conflict is going to last for a long time, could even be years. And I think the tide is turning eventually, thank goodness, in Ukraine's favor, thanks to the HIMARS. Unfortunately, with Lockheed Martin, you're buying the F-35, which has had a few problems. So, rather, if you want to be a war profiteer, go for ITA. You get a broad You get a broad exposure to U.S.
ballistic missiles.
Stock.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Alex. Your pick for the evening.
Yeah. So we spoke about how the market has sold off, you know, quite a lot since March, and I think if you look, a lot of asset management firms. I mean, locally, Coronation, Aquilta, and 91 have sold off quite a lot.
Yes.
My pick is 91, and the reason why I think 91 is far from being ex-growth. This is a very big international business, and I think a lot of you might not know this. You know, so they have 21 different offices worldwide. Only 39% of the assets are in Africa. So they've got substantial positioning in the UK, Europe, Americas, and Asia. And they are growing net flows in all of these markets. So obviously, fantastic management in the business. They've got a huge network, growing network. They've got a historically very strong performance. Most of the asset team is still intact. I back them to perform again going forward. So if you take a medium-term view, I think picking up 91 at these levels is a good view. You want to buy an asset management firm when things are against them because they're cyclical. Eventually, things will turn in their favor again. So I think it's not a bad entry point if you want to hold it for medium-term.
So ITA there if you want to bet on the war, and obviously 91 just buying the dip here. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks to my guests, Alex Dace from Umthombo Wealth and independent analyst Chris Gilmore. Stockwatch is back again on Monday. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.